All right, welcome to North of 48. It's May the 26th. A week back, we had snow where I am, up in northern Alberta. But the sun's shining now, and it's 23 degrees Celsius tomorrow. So what's that, close to 70 Fahrenheit, 68? So we're getting there. Spring's coming. Most of us got our gardens planted. Now, the province of Manitoba in Canada is North America's hotspot for the COVID patients. They've shipped patients out of province because their health system can't handle it. Sad. But seems to be going down everywhere else. A friend of mine was at a softball game and he said there was 60 people there. None of them wearing masks. So I guess they got that vaccine confidence. They think it's not going to happen to them. Well, maybe. Down in the States, things are opening up. Alberta's starting to open up in June. Ontario's looking towards summer to open up. And India is just hurting with all the cases that they've got. Just the outstanding hotspot of the world. Welcome to North of 48. So I managed to get a job. It's on a four-month contract. I have to be as a take care of my own taxes and everything. Basically a consultant. So I'm in my first week doing it. And how I got it was my old boss who left after I did at the mining company I was at, landed with another mining company, and he had the graciousness to think of me and wondered if I was working, phoned me up, asked if I was interested, can only promise me 4 months for now. I said, I'm interested. You know, once you get a little older, it's hard for some of these jobs. I did have a interview at a mill, and a couple of podcasts ago I mentioned that I punted the interview, and it was kicking myself ever since, because that would have been a full-time position. And a lot of us are really hurting. There's people not going back to jobs that don't pay the bills, especially in the States. Some of the states are 7.25 for minimum wage. You need at least $15 an hour to really survive out there. And they're not going back. People have been whining about that, thinking that people are on unemployment are living the life. From what I see, no, it's not really a life. People are just living, and they're scrounging for a job and trying to get a good job, one that can hopefully carry them to retirement or at least pay for food for the family and housing. One company in a $7.25 state for minimum wage advertised his wage at $15 an hour. It's an ice cream place. And he hadn't been able to get anybody. And after 24 hours, he had 1,000 applications. He managed to hire 11 people. And he says that he has not noticed any difference in profits paying higher wages. People seem to be more happy, and they're better with the customers, and customers are flocking into his place of business, so which is good. So I want to take you down a path today where we're doing some of the same mistakes we did in the 30s. So if you bear with me, there's a good story at the end of the podcast. I want to read you a couple of quotes from Will Rogers, and this is during the Depression. You see, in the old days, there was mighty few things bought on credit. Your taste had to be in harmony with your income, for it had never been any other way. I don't reckon there has ever been a time in American homes when there was as much junk in them as there is today. Everybody has got more than they used to have, but they haven't got as much as they thought they ought to have. If we could just go back the last 2 or 3 years and do our buying a little more carefully, why, we would be okay. I'm not against bullfighting. Some nations like to see blood, and some like to see their victims suffer from speculation. They kill the bull very quick. Wall Street lets you live and suffer. Bankers are likable rascals. Now that we are all wise to them, it's been known and shown that they don't know any more about finances than the rest of us know about our businesses, which has proved to be nothing. Calvin Coolidge has this quote: "In other periods of depression, it has always been possible to see some things which were solid and upon which you could base hope. But as I look around about, I now see nothing to give ground to hope." And an unemployed Texas schoolteacher in 1933 said this: "If, with all the advantages I've got, I can't make a living, I'm just no good, I guess." Will Rogers has one more quote: "Our whole depression was brought on by gambling, not in the stock market alone, but in expanding and borrowing and going in debt, all just to make some easy money quick."
Cards collapses, and the overinflated stock market plunges into a Great Depression. A financial panic grips the world. For the majority, it means the interminable line outside factory gates, desperately hoping for a job that rarely comes. It means hunger and the march of the unemployed in the nation's capital. With acute domestic problems, America would now isolate herself more than ever from the international scene. It started in America, but practically overnight, an economic blizzard swept the world. In Japan, France, Britain, always the unemployed, the soup kitchens, the grinding poverty, and the despair.
So with the COVID lockdown and everything, job losses are more concentrated among women, 20% of whom lost their jobs versus 13% of men. Most of the positions more often filled by women than men, such as catering, social work, and cashiering, have almost been wiped out, at least temporarily, due to the shutdown. So back in 2019, Jason Kenney, the current Premier of Alberta, he was the immigration minister in Stephen Harper's government, and they had about temporary workers. So in 2019, C.D. Howe Institute showed that an influx of temporary foreign workers during the past decade from 110,000 to 338,000 a year had raised unemployment rates in British Columbia and Alberta. In his defense, Kenney said the government is acting promptly when it comes across any abuses of the temporary foreign worker program, citing the recent example of a ban placed on restaurants from accessing the program. He stressed that the government was taking any abuse of the program seriously and was even planning for another phase of reforms. These reforms would ensure that Canadians would get the first shot at available jobs always and everywhere. In addition, he mentioned the reforms would ensure that employers only use the program as a limited and last resort. Some of the measures Kenney suggested included the implementation of a limited fast track for workers in high demand professions in regions of the country that had low unemployment. However, this did not placate his critics. His reforms went nowhere. A federal election came, and that was one of the reasons why the Harper Conservative government was let go in favor of Justin Trudeau. And he's since been trying to salvage his reputation, in my opinion. Now, before anybody gets upset that I'm bashing foreign workers, I'm not. Necessarily. What I'm bashing is the system. I want to bring to light a subject that's been bothering me, especially as our kids need jobs as well. So if you bear with me, we'll see if we can get to this end of the podcast still being friends. The temporary foreign worker, I've been reading a book by Harsha Walia, and it's called Border Rule. It's about global migration, capitalism, and the rise of racist nationalism. You know, so this is something that's been with the world. There's borders. There's people needing jobs. They're coming over. However, part of her thesis is that the rich in society and the corporations have made it so people in a country are battling with people who are immigrants or temporary foreign workers for the same jobs, driving down the labor rate and the hourly rate and the money that you can earn for your family. They're making everybody fight. Remember a couple of podcasts ago, I mentioned Tommy Douglas's famous quote, "There's three cookies, a banker takes two of them. Then he looks at you and says, you better get your cookie before that immigrant takes it." So everybody's fighting amongst themselves, which is not fair. There have been problems with the temporary foreign worker program in Canada. So out of Surrey, BC, a trucking company lost its appeal of a court order that it pay more than $350,000 in restitution to 29 temporary foreign workers it hired as long-haul truckers. Last year, Harlan's Trucking Limited pleaded guilty to two immigration offenses related to the hiring of workers, many of whom were from India. Noting that the company had misrepresented to the Canadian government that it would pay the workers $23.50 an hour, but never had the intention to do so, the provincial court imposed a suspended sentence with 2 years probation. They should have took that guy, threw him in jail. Sorry, that's my opinion. A term of the probation was to pay restitution to the workers who were hired from 2011 to 2014. The company also received a $10,000 fine. The sentencing judge heard that although the workers were told to be paid $23.50 an hour, the company always intended to pay them on a 40 cents per mile rate. The workers were told that the contracts they signed with an hourly rate were for immigration purposes only, and they were later instructed to sign new contracts on a cents per mile. Judge concluded that the workers were unaware they would not be paid the hourly rate and were a vulnerable class of employees in an unequal bargaining position with the company. So with the temporary foreign worker, if you're working for a company and you get in trouble or try to start a union, they get rid of you. That's the same as in the States, and that means deportation and you're not making any money. To obtain work permits for foreign workers, an employer must prove it has attempted to recruit Canadians and permanent residents for any positions. Applicants that offered to pay less than the medium wage in Canada are denied. The company argued that the order was inappropriate because the offers of employment should have been resolved in a civil proceedings and claimed that the workers knew from the beginning they'd be paid on a percent mile basis, so there had been no loss. The company claimed that the offer to pay hourly rate was a fiction, since no one in the trucking industry pays by the hour, and even so, the amount paid was the industry standard wage. The Crown argued that the judge was entitled to deference and had carefully considered the evidence in finding that the law obliged the company to pay the wages and benefits set out in the employment offer, and that the workers had suffered a loss. So the economist David Rosenberg has a nice quote, says, "It will not go unrecognized from a political standpoint how the have-nots in this crisis," meaning COVID, "fell even further behind the haves." He warned that income disparity could have far-reaching effects. Currently, jobs that were $14 an hour and under lost 32% of those jobs. $14 to $16 an hour were 28% loss. $16 to $19 were 20% loss. And $19 to $25 an hour jobs, 16% loss. It seemed the higher money that you made, the less job loss there was. So with everybody unemployed, or lots of people, it was 11.3% unemployment in Alberta. The government of Canada has decided temporary workers can now start new Canada jobs in 10 days. The federal government moved to slash the time it takes for foreign workers to be allowed to start a new job. They went from 10 weeks to 10 days, and they can get approval to start the job while their work permit application is processed. I'm sorry for people from other countries who need these jobs. I really, truly am. And I'm going to get more into it. I've been trying to look at both sides of the fence. However, we have to protect our own as well. And it's not a racist thing. I don't care what color you are. Sorry. What country you're from. If you're a Canadian, is a Canadian. Who needs a job? Wages are being depressed. Nurses, they're not getting the money they used to. I mean, thankfully we have temporary foreign workers to help out, especially in low unemployment areas. I mean, that's cool. You make some money and you send it back home. I 100% get it. But do we not have to look after our own as well? Our own people here? I had said this a couple of podcasts alone. There's some people out on the streets who should not be out on the streets. They've hit the skids. We have an opioid epidemic. We have fentanyl. There was just a story out of Edmonton. Three people were laying down in a park. A lady thought they were sleeping because homeless, right? Well, it turns out they died. Drug overdose. Another lady on the news in Edmonton today said that she bought something called purple heroin. And she wishes she never bought it because her and her friend tried it in her apartment. Her friend immediately passed out and she passed out. Somebody found them, called emergency services, and they tried the naloxone on one of the girls, and they used five shots of it because there was no effect. It didn't have an effect. The drug was so powerful. Now, that one lady died, and the other lady was saying she wished she never bought it. But fentanyl's coming in from China. Is this payback for what the British used to do to China with the drugs? No, this is about money. Somebody in the United States and in Canada are making money. The Sadler family made lots of money on OxyContin. They should have been thrown in jail. Again, people should have been thrown into jail. In South Korea and Japan, they'd be doing Harry Carey, committing sideways. But it seems in North America, the rich guys keep getting rich. They pay a $10,000 fine. Life goes on for them. Meanwhile, there's people dead on a playground. And in the morning, kids go to that playground. There has to be a responsibility in this life. So a friend of mine took a federal government program where they're paying to teach him how to drive a class one. And of course, it's with private driving schools. So he goes to the school. They're not wearing masks. Then they put on a mask. He walks into a room. There's supposed to be 10 people per room. And he said there was over 15. They were all from India. And the teacher would start talking. And he'd have to interrupt him and say, "Can you talk English, please? I don't know your language." But the teacher for the driving school said, "It's good for you guys from India to come into this class, because we have a monopoly on gravel truck hauling in the city of Edmonton and in Burnaby and other places." These are his words, okay? This is coming from a fellow who is from India saying these words. Just relaying a story. Now, I worked for the city for a while, and I had to phone gravel trucks to come in for projects. And you have a list of 50 gravel trucks, and you have to start at the top because they're the lowest per hour. So, you know, a free market society, the lowest per hour wins, right? If you got down to the 40 or 45th place, it was usually Ukrainian. And the Ukrainian guy would say, "Ha, you really need me. That's why my price is so high. I can't compete anymore." And I'm not going to go into about maintenance on equipment or anything like that. What I will say, again, it's a temporary foreign worker who isn't getting paid the wage that a normal Canadian worker would do. They're doing it for less, which is supposed to be illegal. In Denmark, you do the wage. You get the wage that that industry has a standard for. So my friend's taking the class, and the instructor comes up to him later. And these are his words, okay? These aren't mine. I'm just relaying it. He says, "Yes, there's a lot of people coming from India. I could tell that you're a little ticked off." And my friend says, "Look, I'm not ticked off. I just want to understand. I want to get my class one. I want to get back to work." He says, "Well, these guys won't be doing what you're doing. For first of all, they're going to work in a different part of the industry." But he said, as a person from India, I'm also concerned with the amount of foreign workers coming over here. He says, they are taking jobs away. And if it becomes like India, not knocking India, but if it becomes like India, is like America, where the rich have money and the poor don't. And he's hoping that Canada does not become like that. So it's just a story. Don't tie your shorts in a knot here. That being said, the temporary worker through the world has got it. He's got it bad. Got no rights in countries. Can't unionize because they'll be kicked out. And there are some brutal cases. So going to the book Border Rule, Global Migration, Capitalism, and the Rise of Racist Nationalism by Harsha Walaya out of Vancouver. She brings up some very good points about immigration, about temporary foreign workers and how they're used in society. They're used to bring wages down, and they're used as a detriment to their own selves. They can't bring their family in. They're working, trying to send money back, and lots of times they're hoping their employer pays them properly. So in Saudi Arabia, they were scapegoating migrant workers. The Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, wanted to combat dissent due to declining oil prices, rising unemployment, and shrinking state programs, and imposition of taxes on citizens for the first time. In 2013, as part of this initiative, it was undertaken to deport irregular migrant workers, resulting in raids, fatal xenophobic attacks by state forces alongside citizens armed with machetes, and mass detention. In the first 2 days after the campaign was announced, 20,000 people were detained, and within 6 months, around 427,000 were deported, mostly to Yemen and Ethiopia. In 2017, Saudi Arabia launched another expulsion campaign, resulting in a staggering 2.1 million arrests in 1 year. This repression quashes the possibility of joint struggle between Saudi dissidents and migrant workers, but also reinforces the authoritarian rule of the ruling monarchs. So, while there are some middle-class white-collar workers sponsored under their immigration system, the vast majority of migrant workers are low-income laborers from Bangladesh, Ethiopia, India, Indonesia, Nepal, Pakistan, the Philippines, Thailand, and Sri Lanka. These workers are imperiled by illegal confiscation of passports, travel documents, and excessive recruitment fees by agents. Non-payment or withholding of wages, long work hours, dangerous conditions, including confinement to the home, physical and sexual violence, false accusations of theft as punishment and discipline, and the constant threat of deportation. Trade unions are banned, and consequences for mobilizing include arrest, deportation, and bans on return. Each country's Ministry of the Interior is an enforcement arm equivalent to the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, which administers and oversees this system in Arabia. Citizenship laws are generally based on the principle of yasenguas, requiring paternal lineage, leaving migrant workers with few avenues to become citizens. Despite years of residency, contributions to the economy, and strong kinship networks, these workers are limited inside the nation state. They are categorized as permanent outsiders. It is no surprise then that desperation is a stifling reality. One migrant worker attempted or committed suicide every 2.5 years in Kuwait in 2010, and an average of 3 suicides were committed every week by construction workers in the UAE over a similar period. So migrant workers make up over 95% of construction workers and domestic workers in the region. The political economy of oil extraction has led to a building frenzy with the construction of massive industrial infrastructure and retail ventures such as luxury apartments and malls. Beneath the glittering skylines of Gulf metropolises like Dubai are millions of construction workers experiencing deadly conditions. In 1 year alone, India, Pakistan, Bangladesh brought back the bodies of 880 construction workers from the UAE. They ironically named Saadiyat Island, Island of Happiness, hosts branches of the Louvre, the Guggenheim Museum, and New York University, as well as golf courses, private residences, and hotels, is an island of misery for the workers tasked with building it in extreme heat for 12 hours a day. The average annual salary for migrant workers on this project is $2,575. Average annual salary is $2,575. Employers withhold wages and passports, and workers are housed and cramped in unsanitary accommodations. When workers went on strike in 2014, the swift response of authorities was to interrogate, detain, and deport hundreds. One worker told Human Rights Watch that 500 men were either deported or had their work visas canceled after the action. In Qatar, the International Trade Union Confederation estimates that at least 5,200 workers will die, almost a dozen workers a week, in the frenzy to build stadiums, hotels, and infrastructure for the World Cup in 2022. A Guardian investigation revealed that workers toil in 50 degree centigrade temperatures, which is 122 degrees Fahrenheit, for 10 hours a day. A dozen men sleep in one room, and many workers are not paid. Ram Kumar Mahara describes, "We were working on an empty stomach for 24 hours, 12 hours work, and then no food all night. When I complained, my manager assaulted me, kicked me out of the labor camp I lived in, and refused to pay me anything. I had to beg for food from other workers." The Guardian further reported that 700 Indian workers died in Qatar between 2010 and 2012, and in a separate investigation that Nepalese workers died at a rate of almost one worker per day during 2013. In response to this pressure, Qatar introduced regulations replacing the term sponsor with recruiter and proclaimed an end to the system. However, the structure remains in place. New regulations, such as one allowing many workers to leave the country without employer permission, are smokescreens because employers can still withhold passports. Workers are still unable to change jobs and will be charged with absconding if they do. The vulnerability of migrant workers in Qatar was evident in March of 2020. Hundreds of workers were rounded up, detained in crowded cells with one piece of bread each, and deported without the wages owed to them. Most troubling was the authorities' use of the pandemic as a cover. The workers were falsely informed they were being transported to health centers to get tested for the coronavirus. Other migrant workers still in the country were locked down forcibly in a migrant labor camp housing thousands of men, with 8 to 10 crammed in a room without adequate access to health care or sanitary supplies, after 351 workers tested positive for the virus. The majority of migrant workers in the region are men, but the most vulnerable workers are women, laboring and living in the home, and they're excluded from labor laws in all of these countries. The labor in private households is characterized by the devaluation of domestic work and subjugation of migrant women workers. Migrant domestic workers provide a substitute for the unwaged labor of women within households, allowing the latter to take up more higher paid employment outside of the household, focus on quality time with their family, and enjoy a life of leisure. According to a 2014 Human Rights Watch report, most migrant domestic workers interviewed in the UAE said employers confiscated passports, physically and sexually abused them, forced them to work long hours without breaks, denied them adequate food and medical treatment, and confined them to the home. Half of these domestic workers interviewed by another researcher in the UAE said they had not left the employer's home alone in over 2 years. An Amnesty investigation of Qatar revealed majority of workers reported similar immobility and exploitation, working 100 hours per week, experiencing severe restrictions on being able to leave the house or make phone calls, verbal harassment, and violence. So workers fleeing this violence are punished with charges of absconding. 90% of migrant women detained in Qatar in 2013 were domestic workers. A gruesome illustration of pervasive gendered violence these women workers face is the case of Indonesian migrant worker Tuti Tursalawata in Saudi Arabia. She was executed in 2018 after being convicted for murdering her employer in an act of self-defense after an attempted rape. Tursalawati was the third Indonesian domestic worker executed in Saudi Arabia in a single year. Filipina worker Jennifer Dalquez defended herself against her employer, who attempted to rape her at a knife point. Sentenced to death, she was later acquitted with the support of a global campaign demanding her freedom. In the UAE, there have been at least three large labor strikes against Arab Tech, a major construction company contracted to build the Louvre, Abu Dhabi, on the world's happiest island, and the world's tallest building in Dubai. 30,000 migrant construction workers went on a 10-day strike against the company in 2007. 3,000 migrant workers took strike action in 2011, and hundreds of workers refused to leave their accommodations and announced a strike in 2013. Beneath these protests and strikes is a movement that destabilizes citizenship, sabotages state capital power, and defies notions of belonging intended to constrain their lives and later mobility in the region. Such migrant networks of existence and resistance extend networks of care beyond national narratives of risky subjects and in the calculations of global finance. So, do I have sympathy for the temporary foreign worker? Oh, you bet. You bet. I don't think Canada's system is much better. It's been held up as the blue chip standard. There was a case in Ontario with some on a produce farm, some Mexican workers who weren't treated very well. And with the coronavirus around, they were, you know, put into bunks that were couldn't socially distance. We have a meat packing plant in Alberta that uses TFWs, bringing the wage down, and they also had one of the highest coronavirus epidemics, and another meat packing plant in Red Deer. So in this global age of centralization, let's centralize all the meat packing into one super duper complex instead of being by the cities where they should be if you're into eating meat. It's causing us quite a concern. Well, I hope you're doing good. I'd like to talk more about this book in future episodes. I went into reading the book, Resistant to Open Borders, but she sure has opened my eyes, I have to say, quite a bit. The name of the book again is Border Rule by Harsha Walia, W-A-L-I-A. I got mine through Kobo Books. It's good to read things that make you think. I still want a permanent job. I think you do too. I still want my kids to have permanent jobs. I would like for us to have the job that you want. But I'm also happy to have the job I need in order to pay the bills and raise a family. I want you to have a good one, and I want to see you next time on North of 48. Bye.